everybody. It's Diane here with the second installment of my new podcast called Diane Rehm on My Mind. A very busy few days here in D.C. Today is Donald Trump's inauguration. Then tomorrow, probably as many as 200,000 women expected here for the Women's March on Washington. Others marching around the country and even around the world. So I really wanted to understand the motives behind why all these women are marching, what they hope to achieve, whether it's a protest against the new president or something else. So we invited several women to help us understand their perspectives. Linda Sarsour is a lead organizer of the March on Washington. Terry O'Neill is president of the National Organization for Women. Charmaine Yost is American Values Senior Fellow. And Mercy Morganfield is a local D.C. organizer for the Women's March on Washington and president of the Power of a Woman series. And I'm going to start with you, Linda. Give us a sense of how this movement got started and what you hope to accomplish.
It started out with just women who were devastated at the idea that Donald Trump was about to be the next president and that misogyny and sexism and racism and xenophobia kind of won the day on election day results. So we are imagining people coming to Washington, D.C. in the hundreds of thousands, saying we are one, we are united, we are going to protect the most marginalized communities. And what it's actually is going to happen, there'll be millions because we are also going to be joined by sister marches, about 600 within the United States of America in all 50 states, as well as over 40 marches globally, standing in solidarity with American women and basically sending a message that women's rights are human rights. So it's so amazing, grassroots, and exciting.
All right, Tan, let's hear from Barbie in Cincinnati.
Hi, my name is Barb Diedrichson. I'm calling to say that I am going to the Women's March in Washington on Saturday from Ohio. I don't know if I can articulate why other than I felt compelled to do this. For my grandmother, who was pregnant with her first child when she got the right to vote. For my mother, who died 1 year before the 2016 election. Both were strong and politically engaged women who weren't afraid to get involved in championing causes and candidates. It's my public statement that I'm ready to do the same. Thank you.
So, Terry O'Neill, why do you think most women are coming to Washington and marching around the country?
I think they are very concerned about policies that they now see coming down the pike. Those fears have been largely confirmed when we look at the cabinet that President-elect Trump has nominated. Betsy DeVos, who seems bent on really dismantling the public school system in favor of more private, market-driven schooling for our children. Tom Price, who claims that he never met a woman who couldn't pay for her own birth control and therefore thinks it's just fine to block women from access to these essential health care. Things to Jeff Sessions, who worked to block communities of color from being able to vote. And right now we have voter suppression as a huge issue in this country. So all of those things put together have put women very much on high alert, not to mention the fear that we will, in fact, lose Roe versus Wade as President-elect Trump and Vice President-elect Pence promised that they would do. So putting all together these policies, women are determined to make their voice heard and say, we're not taking a single step back. We will not go back.
And Linda, how did you settle on the platform you've released? I gather there's a focus on minorities.
Diane, it was very important to us to understand that the imminent threats coming down from this administration are going to impact all Americans, but in particular and more specifically women of color and communities of color. So three of the national co-chairs are women of color. And we said that we would not be able to talk about women's rights or women's reproductive rights without talking about race and class. And I think it's important that we are centering undocumented people, Black women, Muslim women, LGBTQIA communities, who are going to be the most directly impacted under this administration. And women, we believe, are the center and the epicenter of family, of community, and we always hold the brunt of a lot of these issues. You know, we're the parents, we're the caregivers, we're professionals, we're in the work field. So Women, we believe that women are the leadership and what this country needs at this moment. So I'm very proud that the program will be centering all women in the United States, including Native American women as well.
Aunt Mercy Morganfield, I know you're a local organizer for D.C. Race was an issue early on with this march. What has your experience been?
Well, my experience has been the march was got some very bad branding around inclusivity, and that race had factored in with people thinking it was a white woman millennial march, and that immediately turned a lot of other people off, including white women. You know, I talked to my programmer, and my programmer said, that march is not inclusive. Well, when people ask me about inclusivity, this march happened very quickly. It happened fast. Conscious inclusion, not just diversity, conscious inclusion takes time. It takes thought. It's not something that can happen on a dime. As the march grew, and as the people grew, the march is very inclusive. We have a lot of Black women marching now. We have a lot of African-American women marching. We have a lot of, I know that I've been on my bandwagon saying we need to march because we a lot of times don't have trouble with women, with men supporting women in the country. We have trouble with women supporting women. And it's the very easy division is always along race. It's always along religion. And we can't let that divide us.
Terry O'Neill, we've heard a lot about this word. Intersectionality. Explain what that means.
Yeah, the National Organization for Women's Purpose, as articulated in 2015 when we altered our bylaws, is to take action through intersectional grassroots organizing to promote feminist values and to lead societal change. And intersectionality in practice simply means looking to the margins, looking at the impact of a particular policy on the most marginalized women. And then when you pay attention to what is going on to marginalized women, how does that impact your policy?
All right, let's hear from Candace in Louisville.
Hi, this is Candace from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm really upset and disappointed that those organizers thought it was okay to say that they were an inclusive march and organization, and they gave the official partner, New Wave Feminist, the boot because they're pro-life, as if you cannot be pro-life and feminist. And I'm just really disappointed in that.
I wonder, Charmaine Yost, explain to us what the caller is talking about and what your own reaction is.
Well, I think it's interesting hearing this entire conversation about a political agenda that's cloaked in language about women writ large. You know, I just came actually from a breakfast this morning where the speaker was Kellyanne Conway, who will be arguably one of the most powerful women in our country, effective tomorrow as President-elect Trump takes the oath of office. And then, you know, she has been appointed to be his counselor, one of the people who's most close to him. She broke the glass ceiling on the night of the election as the first successful female campaign manager of either party. You know, for those of us who know Kellyanne and even those who don't, watching what she has achieved with his respect and his endorsement of her as a woman, even. I think that there's a very narrow viewpoint here being expressed so far as to what being pro-woman looks like. And to loop in your question about the young pro-life activists who were denied a place in the Women's March, you know, I was very, very disappointed to read that. You know, I've been in politics for many years, and so, you know, I knew when I first heard about the Women's March that it would be, you know, a part of the abortion rights movement. So there wasn't a question as to whether whether I would be involved or even interested in it, because there's such a leftist political agenda, obviously, as the root and the foundation of it all. But I thought it was great that some of these younger, more idealistic young women wanted to be a part of it and wanted to express a differing viewpoint and to come alongside and say that, yes, you can be pro-life and be a feminist. You know, there are certainly, there should be some areas of agreement. You know, I find in my personal life, talking across political lines, that there are ways to come to agreement. But I think the march has really hurt themselves by rejecting these young women and saying you can't be a part of our march. From a larger perspective, I think it's been helpful for some of us, for women who are in the leadership of the institutional feminist movement, to be very explicit and to say, Jessica Valenti, Roxane Gay on Twitter yesterday saying, if you are pro-life, you cannot be a feminist. This is being, abortion is a foundational tenet of modern feminism. I think that's helpful to have that clarity.
Linda, what's your response? If you're anti-abortion, can you be a feminist?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is the reframing of the right on this issue. You know, I'm a Muslim woman. Many people in my community are quite conservative on this issue. The reason why the New Wave Feminists are not an official partner, if they want to come march, they're welcome to, because this is the reason why we live in the United States. Anybody can march in this march, is that they are an anti-choice group. There's a difference between people who are pro-life and anti-choice. So if you're pro-life, you're welcome to this march. But you have to understand that you have to respect the right of a woman to choose for her body. So if a woman chooses to keep her baby, we welcome her. If a woman chooses an abortion, we welcome her too. This is about freedom and giving agency to women to make whatever choice they deem appropriate. The government should not have anything to do with how a woman chooses for her body. Individuals should not have any control over my body. And that's the overarching message here. So this march, there will be pro-life women who also care about our climate and our planet. There are women who care about, you know, voter rights and voter and standing up against voter suppression and immigration and women who are going to be deported. And to the point about Kellyanne, like there's this idea that women are not sophisticated to understand what's going on. I don't care about a powerful woman who just happens to be a woman but doesn't care about my reproductive rights, or a woman that doesn't care about immigration and immigrants who we need to keep safe in our country and deserve to be treated with dignity and respect, and a woman who supports a misogynist, sexist, racist, Islamophobic president and an administration full of Islamophobes and anti-women zealots and people who despise minorities and have track records. I mean, Sessions, for example, was too racist to be a federal judge, but now he's the top cop of the nation. So I'm also offended when people want to tell me that Trump has 4 women in his administration. This has never been about women. I'm willing to support a man for president so as long as he stands up for the rights of all people. This was never about gender, and that's why we have men who are coming out also to support us at the Women's March in Washington.
Mercy, what about you? You have a different sense of women's rights.
Well, my sense is about what we're going to do to move women forward. There's a time and place for everything, as Solomon said. There's a time for anger, and there's a time for strategy. And on January 21st is the time for strategy. We have to start to strategize as women. And as long as we are deeply divided over issues, as long as we don't listen to each other over issues, as long as we believe that our answer is the only answer, we're not going to come together.
I don't think that's what I heard Linda say,
Not Linda. No, I'm just saying, as long as we do the same thing that the men are doing and draw a line in the sand and say this is everything I believe and this is everything you believe, we're going to get the same results the men have been getting, which is a divided country, a divided nation, the most vitriolic environment I have ever lived in my 56 years. I grew up in Mississippi, and I saw this when I was growing up, and I see it again in 2016. And the one thing that's going to make the difference, and I know this might sound Pollyannish, is us coming together, Republican women, Democratic women, Muslim women, Black women. You know, we need to come together and start talking about women, because the fact is this. We didn't gain any seats in Congress in 2016. We lost a gubernatorial seat. Women represent a very tiny percent of government and 50% of the population. And we have 136 women Democrats in Congress and 36 Republicans. So even the Republicans aren't getting their voices heard. Republican women have one GOP leader, one woman GOP leader. And that's sad in 2016.
All right. So, Terry, being anti-abortion is not going to exclude anybody from this march.
Yeah, you know, to pick up on what Linda was talking about, before we talk about labels such as pro-life or feminist, I just want to point out that people are very human. Humans are all somewhat contradictory. We all have these contradictory notions in our head. However, I don't think that you can simultaneously believe and advocate for women's rights as human rights and also at the same time promote policies that block women from accessing essential reproductive health care.
All right. Well, let me stop you right there. Charmaine, was it hard for you to reconcile Trump's comments about women with your political support for
him? I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow your question, but I assume you're asking, did you say, was it hard?
Yeah. Was it hard for you to do that, considering the kinds of things he said on tape with Billy Bush, for example, the kinds of ways in which he has been with women, talked about women? Was it hard for you to reconcile your support for him with those comments?
Like almost all women that I know and even he himself said he was embarrassed by that tape and what was on it. I don't think there's anybody who has defended it, you know, least of all he himself. You know, I would have had a really hard time if he had not come out and publicly apologized for it. It was one of the few times in the campaign where he was very explicit about saying, you know, I'm embarrassed by this. And frankly, that's why I started with Kellyanne, is because, you know, I felt like you had to look at his track record of who does he have around him. It's not just Kellyanne. He also has very close to him his daughter, who is a remarkably accomplished young woman, a businesswoman. And, you know, those kinds of things make a difference to me, to see how does he treat the people who are closest to him. Does he have any women who are close to him that he listens to? And it seems evident that he does listen to them. He, you know, one of your other callers, you know, talked about Betsy DeVos and how she didn't like Betsy DeVos's policy positions on education. I happen to think Betsy's policy positions on education are terrific, and she was one of the first appointments to his cabinet. So, you know, I like to kind of turn it around and say, I find it interesting that women who supported Hillary Clinton are not challenged on her approach to the women who were used and abused by her husband, and that she aided and abetted him in that, in attacking them, tearing them down. And I feel like Hillary Clinton's track record on women is not as good as it is portrayed as being. And, you know, and that doesn't even get into the policy issues. And I felt it was important to choose based on a whole host of policy issues on which they were dramatically different.
Now, Linda, I know you have to leave us. Are you going to reach out to women who supported Donald Trump?
First of all, Donald Trump did not win the election with a mandate. About 60 million people or so vote for him. We live in a country with 340 million Americans. So this election kept a lot of people at home. Those are the people that I'm interested in figuring out. Why didn't they feel compelled to go to the polls and vote for anyone, both Hillary and Donald Trump? I voted for Hillary Clinton, but I was not an original supporter of Hillary Clinton either. I don't support people based on my gender. I support people who care about the human rights of all people living in my country. So if people are compelled by an agenda that says
immigrants deserve to live with dignity and respect, that our children deserve access to the best education in the world, that women and their families deserve access to health care. No one should die because they can't afford to go to a doctor or to a hospital. If people believe that LGBTQIA people are human beings and deserve civil rights, you are welcome to this march. If you believe that Muslims are a fabric of the society and their communities deserve to live safely and in this country and deserve to be included, then you are welcome to this march. I think that we have put out universal messaging that I think should bring all people. If you believe in human rights and believe in true democracy of bringing all people to the table, this is the march for you. So we are already doing that, Diane. I didn't have to do anything. There are going to be hundreds of thousands of people in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. I can guarantee you that. And to remember that there are 600 sister marches happening simultaneously, which could bring us into the millions of people in the streets of the United States of America standing up for what is right. People are disappointed. And again, this president-elect did not win this election with a mandate. He did not win the popular vote. I didn't vote for him, and I will respect the presidency of the United States of America, but I will not respect this president that won an election on the backs of women, on the backs of the undocumented, on the backs of Muslim people, and on the backs of so many vulnerable communities in this country.
All right. Linda Sarsour, she's lead organizer of the Women's March on Washington and executive director of the Arab American Association of New York. And turning now to you, Mercy, what do you make of all that? Is it basically an anti-Trump rally, or is it a rally for women who believe their rights have been denied?
We have said repeatedly it is a rally for women. It's not a rally. It's not an anti-Trump rally, because you know what? It's more than a rally. It is a movement. When you have a million people that are going to be in the streets on the 21st marching for women, that's a movement. It's not a rally. And in saying that, this transcends Trump. It's bigger than Trump. It transcends the 2016 election. It's bigger than the election.
Is there any estimate in your mind, Mercy, as to how many white women will be in this gathering versus how many women of color or of any stripe whatsoever?
I'll give you a guesstimate. I would say there are probably going to be about 65%, you know, white women and probably 35. Am I adding that right?
Yes, you are.
I need a calculator.
And indeed, isn't it white women, Terry O'Neill, who voted for Donald Trump?
Yeah, the outreach that I actually feel like I, as a white woman, have a mission to do is reaching out to white women. Let's look at the numbers very quickly. Only 43% of white women voted for Hillary Clinton, compared with 94% of African American women, over two-thirds of Latinas, and over two-thirds of Asian American women, including a large majorities of Native American women. I haven't been able to get the numbers on that. So it's our sisters of color. Just looking at women, it's our sisters of color who embraced the progressive, inclusive, multicultural, and proudly feminist program that Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party offered, as compared with the racist and xenophobic messaging of the Trump campaign. Trump himself has a persona of being extremely misogynist, but it's fascinating to me that his messaging was really on race and xenophobia. And white women, by 53%, overcame whatever squeamishness they might have had about his bragging about sexual assault, and responded to his message that he would reassert racial hierarchy. That is on white women to have that. White women like me, who a proudly feminist, voted for Hillary Clinton, to have that conversation with white women who put race, their race privilege, ahead of the welfare of our sisters of color.
And Charmaine, I gather there are reports that there may actually be more marchers than people coming for the inauguration. What do you make of that?
There's certainly been rumors to that effect, and I see that as
kind of a pre-marketing kind of thing where you can say that's going to happen, but then no one follows up to see what actually happens. You know, from my perspective, being part of the pro-life movement that has been marching in Washington, D.C. every January 23rd for the last 40-some years with very little media attention and coming back next week, frankly, I think it'll be interesting to see what the numbers are. But I'm particularly troubled in many regards by the tone that we're seeing of protest. I think, you know, it is the best of American life to have free protest and to have a loud protest. And there's been a fairly good tone in this conversation so far, but there's been an awful lot of a lot of fear mongering going on in the broader discussion that I think is troubling in terms of seeing our country come together after this weekend, and I hope we can move in that direction.
And let me read you a comment that was left for us on Facebook from Lourdes, who says, I believe it's a little too late. I believe some women should have done more to make other women vote against Trump. This should have been done before the election. What exactly is the point now? And, Terry, that takes me to the question of whether you believe this coming together can somehow turn to policymaking.
I do. And why didn't more women make other women vote against Donald Trump? Here's something that's fascinating. A couple of years ago, Harvard Kennedy School came out with a study. They asked respondents to look at a story of a woman seeking political power. Not, I want to achieve this goal, but I'd like to hold this office because I'd be awfully good at it, compared with a man seeking political power in the same way. The respondents reacted to the woman seeking power with, quote unquote, feelings of anger and feelings of moral outrage, including anger and disgust. No such feelings were reported by the respondents towards the man. So we have this underlying qualms about a woman seeking power, a woman who is extraordinarily accomplished and would have been, quite frankly, I believe, an extraordinary president of the United States simply because of her talents and her accomplishments. We have, as a nation, we need to really be aware of these qualms. Again, I say white women were not allowed to overcome those qualms. African-American, Latinas, Asian-American, and Native-American women clearly were. So we have a lot of work to do amongst women to try to figure that out. And I think we need to understand, in order to figure it out, the history of our country, from slavery to Jim Crow to mass incarceration, has shown racism to be absolutely deeply intertwined with patriarchy, and you can't separate them. So this business of not trusting women is deeply tied to racism, and we need to wrap our brains around that as a country.
And to you, Mercy, here's a comment from Kevin, who says, as a man, I'm attending to honor and support my mother's career dedication to the mission of Planned Parenthood. What impacts women matters to men. Do you know of a great many men who are attending the march?
I know there are a great many men attending the march. And in addition, we're right after the march. We have the Power of a Woman series at the Women's Democratic Club. And we have an all-male panel called Men Who Empower Women. We have a lot of men who this has catalyzed, this entire march, this entire movement, is catalyzed men into action to say, I don't want this for my country either. I don't want this for my daughter either. And one thing I want to say just really quickly, you have so many women who are going to be in this city, in Washington, D.C., on Saturday, January 21st. If you really want to reach out to women, why wouldn't you want to reach out to these women? We could not get a single Republican to come to the series to reach out to women.
Sure.
Not a single one.
Might you attend the march?
You know, I haven't been invited. And, of course, if I were invited.
I'm not sure anyone has been specifically invited. I mean, I know a great number of women who are coming. I know a great number of women who are not. It's all voluntary,
I just feel like
I guess.
This conversation has really slightly whitewashed how aggressively attacked the young pro-life women were who wanted to partner. You know, if there had been a partnership with a pro-life group, I absolutely would have attended because I would have seen that as a path-breaking move. I think that, you know, pretty much every pro-life woman that I know heard loud and clear that we were not welcome. I do know Students for Life of America is planning to go and carry pro-life banners, you know, which is very spirited of them. And I think that's terrific. But given the fact that the organizers have made it very clear that abortion rights is at the heart of what they're marching for, Cecile Richards is kicking off the march as a keynote speaker, I can't be a part of something like that because I think abortion is one of the most fundamental things that abuses women in our culture and undermines female power.
All right, Terry, last word.
I just want to say pro-life women that I know, years ago I was doing some organizing in New Orleans in the progressive community, which is very predominantly African-American, and we got to talking about abortion. And my African-American friends said, yes, abortion is wrong. That's what my religion teaches me. And then this woman said, but the young ladies are going to do what the young ladies are going to do, and it is our job to keep them safe.
And,
that's pro-life.
And, of course, we know that as a result of improved birth control, the abortion rate has gone down, down, down.
I'm pro-life. I'm not anti-choice, but I'm pro-life. And when we talk about pro-life, I would like to see it extended. If you really are about pro-life, then you would not want to see a child starve. You would not want to see a child not schooled or not clothed.
We'll leave it there. Mercy Morganfield, Terry O'Neill, Charmaine Yost.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to have heard all these voices talking about the Women's March on Washington. I do want to remind you of one thing that Coretta Scott King said. She said, women, if the soul of the nation is to be saved, I believe that you must become its soul. Thanks so much for listening. Next week, a subject near and dear to my heart, aid in dying. We want to hear from you, so be in touch at Facebook and Twitter. Leave us a message at 202-854-8851. Our theme music was composed by Cliff Harden and used courtesy of WAMU's Capital Soundtrack Project. So, it's Diane Rain. Talk to you next week.